Welcome. So happy it's Thursday. ESPN 1700 AM Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
Myself, Ryan White. With us today in studio, Reed Matthews, financial advisor, certified financial planner, first vice president of investments with Wells Fargo Advisors. Welcome, Reed.
Thanks for having me today.
Glad to have you here. You're a, third-time offender, right?
I think this is, yeah, my third or fourth time with you.
Third or fourth time. Okay, and you keep coming back.
Let the hazing begin, right?
That's right. That's right. Also, she's running just a little bit late, but she'll be here. Brenda Geiger. She is an estate, business, and elder law attorney, as well as author. Written three books, Safeguarding the Nest, How to Avoid the Catastrophic Costs and Effects of Long-Term Care, and the new one that we're going to talk about today, Protecting You and Your Business, a California Guide for Business Owners, ahead of us later today. So the first topic we're going to direct at Reed here, why do we care about the Fed's buying bonds or stopping to buy bonds? Why is that so important? There's so much conversation about the threat that they're going to pull back on their bond purchasing.
Yeah, this ought to be good.
It seems to really have a ripple effect in the marketplace. Well, tell me what's going on with that.
Well, one of the theories is that the Fed is removing what they've been calling as the punch bowl. So essentially, they've been injecting a lot of liquidity since the financial markets in various forms. And we've heard all these terms of quantitative easing, one, two, three, et cetera. And really what it is, it's a form of injecting money into the system to promote growth and lending and all those types of things. So with excess liquidity and money, you know, basically sloshing around, it's going to find a home eventually. And what it's done is it's found a home within various different types of assets. One of the main ones has been bonds. And really in the financial world, bonds kind of drive everything because that's where interest rates are derived from. So that impacts, you know, the rate that you're going to pay on a credit card or what you might have to pay to finance the purchase of a first home. And so with this excess liquidity, it's really driven asset prices have recovered very nicely. I mean, we all see it in the values of our homes here in San Diego, or whether we see it in our portfolios, our 401ks. And for a long time, up until recently, it was really helping impact the returns on our bonds and various kind of fixed income investments. Mm-hmm. So the removal or even just the talk of taking this away has kind of put some fear into the markets.
So I think you said that it was helping the bonds.
It was, yes.
So the fact that the Feds were putting money into the market caused the return on the bonds to be greater?
Absolutely. So what happens is when they're buying bonds, it's going to increase the value of those bonds, and inversely, interest rates will fall. And that's how bonds
work. That's what happened.
That's what happened. And so it worked very well. It put a floor under pretty much all different types of asset prices. And we saw stabilization both in the economy and in the value of the things that we own. And in turn, you know, they're a lot of it's designed around trying to promote job growth. That's their main goal, is to try and spur the economy to get the unemployment rate down.
So this is maybe something of an artificial recovery that the government is proposing that they're doing that is perhaps going to be – that they'll be stopping doing so much, or they're going to reduce the amount of bonds they're buying, and thus that may have a ripple effect and stop our recovery? Is that what we're afraid of?
Or it just simply could be that they're confident enough that we've recovered far enough that we can, you know, get off the gravy train. Right.
Yeah. And that's really what they've been in. See, they haven't even really stopped buying bonds yet. What they've done is they've changed the language that they're communicating with to the public.
Words, they've threatened that they're going to stop
someday. Right. Yes.
Someday.
Yeah. And they're keeping it open ended because there's a lot of other things going on all around the world that they have to keep a close eye on.
Well, didn't we always think at some point they were going to stop doing this? I mean, is that revolutionary? Did we always think this was going to continue?
I think it's interesting that the move we've seen so quickly happened. You know, interest rates, I'm sure you guys are well aware, they've spiked recently. Starting in the very beginning of May through June, we saw a big move up. They came back down a little bit. They've gone back up again. And everyone knew that this was coming. I think it's just that reality setting in that it's here.
Well, let's just back up for a second. Yeah, sure, we're on the cutting edge of the real estate market, and we do see the impacts that are made when interest rates are bumped even half a point. And it's really interesting to see what's happening lately with a lot of the mortgage professionals. You know, a lot of the guys were really making decent incomes based on a lot of the refinance market. And so I still think that there is a refinance market out there because there's a lot of folks that didn't have equity at the time when the market was when the rates were lower. Now they have equity, but interest rates are higher, you know. So maybe you can't get 3.5, but you can get a pretty good historically low rate. But at the same time, there are fewer refinances going on. With the higher interest rates, naturally, that affects the overall expense of the home. So we see fewer transactions than we were at that peak of the low interest rate point. However, you know, the market's still pretty darn good, but we do see that it has slowed down things a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's what the you know the people are fearful of out there is that this rise in interest rates. First of all, there's a difference between a steady, you know, planned move in interest rates and having a very sharp spike. And we've seen it's been fairly orderly, but we have seen a significant spike. It hasn't been so much in yet on, you know, the stuff that impacts your world, which would be the 30-year treasury bond, which impacts mortgages, et cetera. And it hasn't been on the short end of the yield curve, which is the short-term interest rates that drive a lot of, you know, our financing with credit cards and things like that. It's been kind of in this middle part, the 10-year treasury yield has moved up over 1% since May. And that's historically, that's a huge move up. The reality is, though, is it's just a move back to where we were in 2011. And it's moved for two reasons. One, the talk in the market of, hey, they're going to remove this punch bowl. And two, that we're getting significantly better, as you said, economic data, whether it's coming through the housing markets or retail sales in certain sectors, manufacturing, the numbers are there. And jobless claims have been dropping. The unemployment rate is stabilized and falling. We're seeing some good news, and that's the reality. And I think that's what the Fed's goal was initially anyways.
So it could be that, you know, the banks have been offering pretty low rates and the government's been buying them at pretty low rates. And there's investors that are quite frustrated with the fact that their return on loaning that kind of money has been low. And so now with interest rates creeping up, basically what's happening, as far as I can see, is that they're seeing a recovery and then they're beginning to hedge up interest rates so they can get a better return on their investment. So, you know, it seems as though if they're feeling confident that the economy has recovered to some extent, they can raise interest rates to a point, harvest a better gain, and yet still not topple the economy the way it was.
We're really in that transition phase, right? From needing those training wheels with the economy
right.
and everything that's going on to that back to a normal environment, which is not needing those training wheels.
Well, you know, the other factor here that I've always looked at is when we start to see the bank's underwriting guidelines get a little bit more liberal and we start to see the government make some pretty bold statements like we're going to stop buying bonds, we begin to inherently see that there's really high paid professionals out there that are watching the economy and they're making decisions and advising the banks, hey, it looks like it's okay. Or like you said, the government's watching a lot of the rest of the world and they're looking at our economy and they're making decisions on what they should do to keep us, you know, from bankruptcy, if you will. And that ought to be a good indicator as a participant in this economy, meaning if there are a lot of people out there that are deciding that it's okay to remove bond buying from the marketplace, it really may be an indicator that we're stable enough and we should be confident enough to go out there and boldly buy things. The thing that I'm seeing as an indicator that's sort of a warning sign out there is that this last recession that we were in wasn't an interest rate driven recession, if you will. There has been an interest rate driven recession. You'll probably know people that said that they purchased a home where interest rates were 18.5%, something that we haven't seen for a very long time. Now just imagine for a second what kind of impact high interest rates like that could make on our economy and the cost of buying a home, it would be catastrophic. However, there's probably a median rate in there. But those are perhaps pretty far off. I guess my point is that, you know, with interest rates being maybe not 3.5%, maybe not even 4%, but still pretty darn low, that's the highest expense that someone's going to have when they purchase a house if you really look at it. If you're looking at a house and you're negotiating an additional $10,000 off the price, if the interest rate goes up a percent, that's an enormous difference in the overall expense of that house.
Sure. And I think that, like I said, we're in this transition period of time. And it's all of this that's been going on is mostly psychological. And it's that change from extremely low historic interest rates, you know, at 50, 60-year lows, transitioning more to a normalized environment. But like you said, it's still extremely low. I see that, you know, with an improving economy, improving job market, et cetera, that's really going to drive certain types of assets, particularly real estate, should do well in that environment because people's incomes, they feel better, and interest rates will still be historically low. All those people, I'm sure you guys know, that have been sitting on the sidelines, kind of myself included out there, have been waiting for the real estate market to show some signs of stabilization and recovery. Well, that's in place now, and now they're kind of fighting that battle between rising interest rates and the stabilization. But I think at the end of the day, with an improving total picture, their 401ks are up, their job stability is there, they're going to be driven to make a decision regardless of whether they were able to get a 30-year at 3.5% or whether it's 5.5%. Both of those are both very low historic rates.
Historically low rates. Yeah. And yeah, I can see how people can look at this and say that this could be a problem, that they're going to discontinue or back off on their bond purchase stimulus program. But I kind of see it as a sign of optimism, and that they don't necessarily need to do it anymore. The ball is rolling, so to speak. With enough momentum, it's going to continue to go, and they can leave it up to the people to continue the ball rolling. Is that kind of how you see it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's reflected in the valuations of, you know, home prices here in San Diego are moving up.
Absolutely.
You also see, you have the returns on the equity markets are impressive this year. I mean, the profitability in corporate America has never been as good as it is right now. So when you look at that, that stimulus that they put in there through low interest rates, it worked. And
it worked,
now
yeah.
They're basically saying, hey, we've got to do some things here to pull that back. Because at the end of the day, there's greater risks in keeping the stimulus around in the form of potentially high inflation and other problems which impact people's, the long-term economy. You know, inflation is just a killer. And so they're very aware of that. And if they keep interest rates too low, they're going to be put into a position where they're going to have to fight high inflation, which is a whole nother problem. So they're in that transition. And I think that they're doing it for the right reasons. And they really haven't done it yet. But they were very intelligent about it. Just talking about it has I think, normalized where we are within the
Yeah, they may be doing it right? I mean, let's mention it. Let's see what the economy does.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, whatever they say, there's a reaction.
Absolutely. And people are more sensitive to it right now than I think they ever have been, and for good reason. But, look at returns on assets, and it definitely worked.
It's good advice, Reed. It's nice to understand what's going out there, and there's no reason to necessarily go freaking out because they're going to stop their bond stimulus program anytime soon. I think it's evidence that things are getting better. When we come back, we're going to talk with Brenda Geiger about her new book, How to Avoid the Catastrophic Costs and Effects of Long-Term Care. Excuse me, Protecting You and Your Business, A California Guide to Business Owners. When we come back. Welcome back. So happy it's Thursday. ESPN 1700 AM, Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. We just heard from Reed Matthews, financial advisor, first vice president of investments here with Wells Fargo Advisors. We discussed a little bit about the feds and their decision, or I guess it's more of a mention, to stop their bond purchase stimulus program. For more information with Reed Matthews, his number is 858-342-1359. One more time, it's 858-342-1359. Now with us here, Brenda Geiger, estate, business, and elder law attorney and author, at least three times over. How many books have you written?
Three. I'm working on a fourth.
Working on a fourth. Wow. Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, but I love to do it, so it's kind of like it's just fun for me.
Yeah, and I mean, when we've talked, this isn't just some book that you've had other people write. It's, I mean, you're busy already doing what you do, but you've actually taken the time to actually really put thought and effort into publishing these books.
Yeah, a lot of my clients ask me similar questions time and again. So what I've done is I've taken the questions that I get asked the most and the questions I think people should ask, and then I've condensed it into a book.
Yeah, like a FAQ, frequently asked questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that way. In fact, I noticed that when people do sign up to come visit you, one of the prerequisites that you have is that they read your book.
Yeah, I find the client gets way more out of the consultation once they've read the book. They can ask a lot better questions, and sometimes they can ask me questions they didn't even know to ask.
Well, it sounds contrary to what I would imagine most of the attorneys are out there doing, because if someone comes to sit down with you and they're efficient about their time that they spend with you, it would seem to me that it costs less to work with you because they've actually taken the time to gain a bit of knowledge, so that when you do sit down with them and it is something that they're getting advice from you to do with this life situation, that they're, whether they're putting a trust together or they're doing some business law or even elder law, they are more informed and therefore more efficient about the time that they spend with you.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And so you had mentioned not only have you got these books, but you can request a copy of these books by simply going to your website at geigerlawoffice.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, I've been to your site. You've got a couple of videos on there as well.
Yeah. I'm trying to get more video to help clients. Yeah.
And so one of the things that we also talked about is that you've got an up-and-coming movie where you've rented out a theater. Is that something that we can talk about right now?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Do you want me to tell you about it?
Sure, yeah.
I belong to an organization called Advisors in Philanthropy. And what that is it's a financial business and attorneys, CPAs that belong to this national organization to help people plan charitably. And they have a national conference. So this year, it was in Vegas, and they had the movie producers for The Ultimate Gift there. James Stovall wrote the book and produced this movie back in 2006. And now they're doing a prequel and a sequel. It's kind of wrapped into one about this movie. So the original movie is the story of movie actor James Garner. Mm-hmm. He's the one that plays billionaire Red. And Red amasses, you know, $1 billion over his life. He's an oil tycoon. But he comes from very humble beginnings. He was a Depression-era child. And he is fraught with all kinds of problems in his family. Now everybody's, you know, kind of like a trust fund baby. And he's got hope and promise in his grandson, Jason, from his beloved deceased son's – this is his beloved deceased son's child. So he leaves his legacy to him, but over the course of, I think it's probably several months, he needs Jason to go through these steps in the original movie back in 2006 in order to get to the money. So he ends up doing all this stuff and gains so much more out of it than the wealth that he inherits. So, you know, that first movie starts with Red on camera.
Yeah, the first movie was great, actually. It was one of those, you know, feel good, inspiring movies.
Yeah, I mean, everybody I talk to cries. Well, at least if you're a woman, you cry. I know. Every time I see it,
Ryan
now,
cried
I cry.
Like a baby at it.
Yeah, and one of my employees said, because we give this away at our trust signings, we give people a copy of the movie, and she said, I took it home and watched it, and I just cried like a baby. My eyes were so swollen next day. But it's a great, great movie. So I'm really excited that they've decided to do a sequel to the movie. You know, now several years later. But while we were at AIP, they said, anybody in the room that wants to host your own Hollywood-style premiere, hey, we're going to let you do that. You contact us, and we'll set it up for you. I mean, we had to pay for it, but
I think it's brilliant. I wish we'd have thought of the idea. It's really, really neat to be able to reach out to your clients and offer them the opportunity to come to the theater and see the movie.
Yeah. And we still do have a few tickets available, so for a limited number of people that want to call my office, you know, we're willing to invite them and they can come for free. And we're giving away an iPad.
What's the number you want them to call?
760-448-2220. Or you can go on to our website, to our contact page, and we'll get that request that way too. And that's geigerlawoffice.com.
Yeah, I know I've actually signed up. I'm going to be there. And so it's going to be a nice time. I mean, yeah, I'm excited about seeing the movie. You know, I tell you, there's a couple movies that stand out that have had an impact. You know, one is Fireproof. You know, that's a great movie as well. And then when it comes to, you know, life situations that people are going through, it would seem to me that what you do is really on the front lines of preventative medicine versus the kind of attorney that, you know, really goes in and tries to fix a problem. You're preventing problems.
Yeah.
And frankly, if you're in this life, in this world, there's a tax on it. You're going to have to give a certain pound of flesh, if you will, just by simply being alive and being subject to walking on this planet. And so you already know that there's situations that are going to come up. And so tell us exactly what you do.
Practice areas?
Yeah.
So I practice in estate planning. So primarily in California, that entails setting up a trust plan. So whether you have several hundred thousand dollars in net worth or if you have a $50 million estate, everybody needs at least to have a base trust plan.
Well, you know, let's break that down for a second, because if you happen to be going through a situation like you're talking about, a trust where if you pass away, what the instructions are for your estate.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a will substitute. But the thing that makes it different is that it's a living document. So a will only comes into effect once you're dead. Mm-hmm. So it does nothing for you during your lifetime, whereas a trust helps manage your property. So in the event, let's say you had a stroke or you got in a car accident, you're raced to the hospital and you don't have capacity, your successor trustees can step in without a beat, continue to pay your bills. If you have minor children, continue to pay for things for them, take care of them.
Or let's say that you've got a number of rental properties and you want to put them in its own separate trust in case somebody tries to come after you for your assets. Is that something that
That's where, you know, the business law and the estate planning cross over. So in the business law context, we help people form entities. We help them structure buy-sell agreements and fund them, ESOPs, all kinds of things. But for the real estate, what we want to do typically is put it into an LLC. So it's a matter of figuring out what jurisdiction to form that LLC under, because you don't necessarily have to form it in California. You may have to form a file here if the property is here and if your client is here. But the asset protection comes in, because if something happens bad on that property, whether it's a commercial property or a rental property, they're going to sue the entity and not the person in their name. So if it's just hanging out there in your name, there's a huge probability that if you're sued, your assets are subject to being taken. So you really want
to
have it.
It's really play on the words right there, it seems to me. But not that you did that. I'm just saying that it just seems that, you know, when you've got your assets out there, that you're subject to possibly, you know, getting in a bit of trouble with, you know, situations that may arise. So, you know, if we're working with you, you've also got a specialty in the elder law area.
Yeah. So a colleague of mine in Orange County who's an expert in VA planning. For elder law. We wrote a book last spring, and it got released in April. It's the one that Ryan was referring to, How to Avoid the Catastrophic Costs and Effects of Long-Term Care. So what that is, it's kind of like a hybrid. It has some elements of estate planning in it, but what we're doing is we're planning for the possibility of needing public benefits at some point. The statistics show currently that if you're over the age of 70, there's greater than a 60% chance that you're going to need some kind of long-term care within your life. And if you outlive your money, what happens? So obviously you want to have a great financial advisor like we have here today to help you avoid that from happening. But, you know, you've got to have a plan. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a plan. I see people without long-term care insurance all the time, and they don't want to spend the money for it. It's too expensive. You know, it's so foolish to think that. It's probably the one thing that you're probably going to use more than any other any other insurance product.
So did you say 60% of people that are over 70 years old will need long-term care?
Probably more than that. Yeah, people are living so long today that you don't want to be in a situation where you have to outlive your funds. But so part of what elder law is looking at the big picture and saying, okay, what do we need to do to structure your estate so that if that happens, if some catastrophic thing happens, you're not left with only crisis planning options. You want to have as many options available to you as you can. You may never need public benefits, but what if you do?
Right. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Brenda Geiger with the Geiger Law Office. And Brenda's got this new theater thing she's going on. She's got The Ultimate Life, where you've rented a theater out. And if you've got interest in meeting Brenda Geiger or seeing this movie and maybe doing a little bit of networking at the same time, give her firm a call at 760-448-2220. Again, 760-448-2220. And we're talking about elder law. We're talking about an estate plan. And the fact is that you actually have a plan in place. If you don't have a plan at all, it's just the state's plan.
Yeah. The state of California's probate code. That's your plan.
Yeah. You're talking about just amending what they already have in place. And I got to tell you, most cases, what they have in place is not the best thing for your family.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Reed Matthews and get a little bit deeper with retirement planning ahead of us when we come back. So, happiest Thursday. Welcome. ESPN 1700 AM, Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. We just heard from Brenda Geiger, estate, business, and elder law attorney and author also. Her website, geigerlawoffice.com, that's spelled GEIGERLAWOFFICE.com, geigerlawoffice.com. For more information on any of her books, Safeguarding the Nest, How to Avoid the Catastrophic Costs and Effects of Long-Term Care, Protecting You and Your Business, a California Guide for Business Owners, all there on our website.
In fact, if you do go to our website, which I've been to many times, you can actually request a copy of these books.
That's right. Yeah, if you go to that web address and then /elder law book or /safeguarding the nest, you can request a book and we'll send it to you for free.
Excellent. Now, Reed, I certainly hope to retire sometime today. Sooner than later would be better.
Today. Not until after
and,
the show.
And it certainly does not look that it's going to happen without a substantial amount of planning. I would imagine that's where you come in. Retirement planning. Although not the most sexy topic in the world, I would imagine a lot of people want to put it on the back burner, so to speak, but obviously important.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, first of all, I think we just talked about long-term care, right? I think that that's something that if you don't have in place can blow up a retirement plan or an estate plan, and it's extremely important. So I see that as a huge value and working. Also, I think one thing in starting with a good plan is having a good group of advisors around you. And to me, that includes having a great real estate agent, having a good financial advisor, having a great estate planning attorney, tax attorney, and then a really good accountant, and having a team of people that's working closely together to help you, you know, achieve your goals, whatever those may be. And so that's my part of that whole planning process is being really that person's guide. In many situations, I'm kind of the quarterback where I'm helping coordinate all of those people together, and one of the focuses that I have is on helping people, navigate retirement two ways. Number one is doing the necessary steps to get there, which typically involves saving and using the right tools, whether it's a 401k or IRAs or maybe some type of life insurance, whatever it may be, using those tools to get you to that point where you can comfortably retire. And then the second part is helping people in what I view as one of the most important stages, which is the distribution stage of retirement, which I think we've, as an industry, we've overlooked. And it's really the most important stage. So
the distribution stage, meaning when you start to...
Yeah, when you're depending upon your assets. Mm-hmm. So you've worked your entire life and you have this pool of money. And today, many of us don't have pensions. Those have kind of come and gone. So our pension, we're going to have to create that on our own, and that will come in the form of saving up enough money to retire comfortably. We obviously will have things like Social Security, and maybe if we were in the military, some benefit. Teachers still have pensions, et cetera. But I know myself, and I know you two, you're not going to have a pension. And so we have to make sure that we're getting to that point and putting enough money aside to retire comfortably.
You know, it gets really complicated when you start talking about that because, in fact, you don't know what your tax situation is going to be when you retire, right? We don't know, we may be talking 30 years from now. We may be talking 10 years from now. We may be talking 15. So we don't really know the situation. A lot of people are writing things off, including mortgage interest, and the house may be paid off by then. You know, there are certain circumstances where people are expecting that because of the fact that they're not going to be earning money, that their tax income – it's going to be a lot less. So, you know, taxes can be a huge impact on how you financially work out someone's future.
Yeah, and that's where I come in. I try and efficiently as possible put together, you know, the different tools out there to either shelter taxes or provide some form of tax advantaged benefit down the road. And in that mix, and you know, real estate is a part of that. And you know, for one person, it might be tax free income through municipal bonds, using your retirement plans, Roth IRAs, doing conversions. There's a lot of different things we can do, and that's really tailored to each and every individual person and kind of what their situation is now. And then what we try and do is forecast down the road what that might look for them like. For each individual person.
Sure. And in terms of forecasting, I would imagine there's some metrics we have to determine life expectancy of an individual and then calculate back, let's say, retirement at 65, live to 95. That's 30 years you have to accumulate enough money to live off of. There's got to be some way of formulating a plan to make sure you hit the right number.
Yeah, and that's what I do. And, you know, I'm really a goals and needs-based kind of financial planner where people come to me with those goals and the needs, and I plug in numbers, and I can tell them exactly what that looks like. Our industry also likes to complicate things, but there's a fairly simple way of looking at it. And really, at the end of the day, when you retire, you're basically going to need to save up enough money to where you could have a withdrawal rate. Now, everyone confuses what they'll earn on their investments versus what they can take out. And where I try and get people to focus on is how much money they can be pulling from their accounts. And
to live on.
To live on, yeah. Okay. To live on in retirement. And that meaning of that being sustainable over a very long-term life expectancy. And so if you're retiring today at 60, that might look like, you know, 92, 95 years old. That's what the expectations are today. Which is scary in and of itself.
Take
so,
it.
You know, people want to know, really, at the end of the day, am I going to outlive my money? Am I going to outlive my resources? So to the best of our ability, what we try and do is give them an idea of what that looks like. And so all these financial plans and fancy software tools that we have, really, it comes down to distribution rate. And that distribution rate is somewhere between 3.5% and 4.5%. So an example would be if you have $1 million and you're retiring today, your expected distribution rate for that would be somewhere between $35,000 and $45,000 a year. And many of us got excited during the 1990s and thought that we would always be able to take out our 8 to 10% and that would be sustainable. Well, we learned quickly that you get periods of time where it's difficult to get those types of returns like we are in that right now. And that whole plan blows up. And so what we've designed is portfolios that can stand the test of time and make it through a retirement. And so people have to have those realistic expectations that number really comes somewhere between that 3.5% and 4.5% distribution rate. Now, understand that's indexed for inflation because, you know, $35,000 today, 10 years from now, isn't going to buy the same amount of gas in your tank. So each year you're taking a little more out to keep up with the rising costs of living.
Is that in a retirement account or is that like in a taxable account or does it matter?
You know, for me, I'm looking at it as it doesn't really matter. Some of that number, for example, that 3.5% or 4.5% kind of distribution rate, that's why I have a range there that I use. And I'm a little more conservative with how I look at it. So someone with more money that's already been taxed, so outside of a retirement plan, probably can get closer to that 4.5% distribution rate, somewhere where their money's all been tax deferred. And so every mm-hmm. dollar they take out is going to be taxed. Their true distribution rate might be a little bit more like 3.5%. So that's how I kind of look at it. Because they've got to take out 45, really, right, in retirement to get the 35.
Yeah.
That's a little bit scary to think that you're stuck living on that only $1 million for the next 30 years. That is a scary thought.
It is, and I think that's one of the mistakes that people make is they get fearful and they realize that they're behind and they've made some mistakes or they didn't save enough money. And that's what I see a lot of times with younger people. So people under the age of, let's say, 60, is that a lot of people are undersaved or they're currently undersaving. And that's one of the big mistakes that people can make is that they need to prioritize their goals, at least be armed with the right information so that you know what it might look like in retirement so that you can make some decisions to save enough money.
We're talking with Reed Matthews, financial advisor and first vice president of investments with Wells Fargo Advisor. His number here is 858-342-1359. Again, the number 858-342-1359. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with Brenda Geiger and discuss a couple topics out of her new book. The book is Protecting You and Your Business, and I've selected Choice of Entity for Your Business and Piercing the Corporate Veil ahead of us when we come back. Life throws a lot at us. Marriage, children, new career opportunities. That's why you need an investment plan that's flexible enough to adapt the changes in your life. Not to mention the market's ups and downs. At Wells Fargo Advisors, we're with you. We need a plan that's right for you. With our Envision process, we'll work with you to help and create a plan that's unique to your goals. Your plan offers the potential to help get from where you were to where you want to be, and you will have the ability to adapt to whatever life or the market throws your way. In San Diego, call Reed Matthews today at 858-342-1359. That's 858-342-1359. Envision is a registered trademark of Wells Fargo & Company and used under license. So happy it's Thursday. Welcome back. ESPN 1700 AM Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. Just heard from Reed Matthews, financial advisor there with Wells Fargo, discussing retirement planning and everything that he has to offer in terms of making sure you don't run out of money in retirement. This seems like really important stuff, Reed. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
Now, Brenda, we want to go through a couple of topics in your book, the new book, Protecting You and Your Business, A California Guide for Business Owners.
Well, one of the things I wanted to touch on before we really get into that is the fact that you can go to her site and get some of these books, request the copies of these books. But, you know, the books really aren't legal advice.
Yeah, you should always seek out advice from an attorney before you do anything. But it's just frequently asked questions and just trying to educate clients about what the issues are, what they need to be thinking about.
Well, you know, I've read your books, and I've got the new one drafted here. It's a really easy read. They're not like, you know, 150 pages. We're talking about, you know, 65 pages in your new book. You know, and it gives a brief background. I mean, a lot of people have a struggle. You know, your father passed away at age 40, pretty catastrophic.
Ooh, yeah.
You've succeeded.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he was a business owner. In fact, I come from a long line of business owners. So it's kind of in my blood. My dad was 40, and he was diagnosed with colon cancer, and he died within 3 months of diagnosis. So he was at stage 4. They think he had it for probably about 6 years.
Wow.
But, you know, who in their 30s really thinks that they have that? You know, it's not something, you know. And
you don't even get tested for it until you're 40.
50.
Really?
50. I've been tested because of what happened to him, but and I'm 42. But yeah, it's devastating. But, you know, and I got to see firsthand with my dad and also with my grandfather a lot of the mistakes that they made in business, legally and otherwise, and some of the great things that they did. So I've always had a really strong interest in business law and always practice it. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to write a book for my business owner clients to help them.
You know, and I would imagine, you know, any business owner should get a hold of this book because it really does answer questions that even I don't have the answers to in a lot of cases. I mean, for example, you know, I go to my CPA and she says, you know, you should be an S corp, right? Well, you know, I'm getting advice from them. I'm sure it's good advice, but at the same time, knowledge is power. And this book, chapter 2, Choice of Entity for Your Business, really outlines, without necessarily suggesting you should do one or the other, what each one of them is. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I wrote this so that you'd have kind of an idea of what the six main entity choices are. Sole proprietor, that's if you're in business by yourself and you're not an entity. So if for some reason you were sued in a business capacity, they can sue you in your name personally and get to your personal assets. Then there's the general partnership, limited partnerships. Limited partnerships do offer some protection for the limited partners. And then there's the S-Corp, the C-Corp, and the LLC. And there may be tax reasons, like you just mentioned, for doing one or another, but you have to also take into consideration what the legal consequences are of each of these entities. And there are certain planning techniques that you can do in a C-Corp that you can't do in an S-Corp. And there are also certain things that you have to do to protect your corporate shield that you may have to do if you have a corporation versus an LLC. So, and LLCs can be taxed as corporations. So you can have an S election on an LLC, which is kind of cool. A lot of people don't realize you can do that. So I think it's great to have advice from your CPA, and you should include them in the planning process. But you really do need to seek out counsel on the business for the legal side of things.
Yeah, and you mentioned like piercing the corporate veil, you know, in Chapter 3. You tell us a little bit about Chapter 3 and what do you mean by that?
So piercing the corporate veil really means not respecting the entity. So an example of that might be commingling your finances with your business finances, so paying a personal bill out of corporate funds or LLC funds. It could be not following the corporate governance, so not filing your statement of information with the Secretary of State annually or not doing your corporate annual meeting minutes. Because if you're ever sued, the first thing the other side is going to do is they're going to request your corporate records because they're going to try to poke a hole right through your entity and say, you know what, you're not respecting your entity, so why should we? So let's not give you the corporate shield. Let's pierce through it and get to your personal assets. So that's a huge thing. And I've seen so many business owners come to me and they've formed an LLC or they formed an S-Corp years ago. Maybe they did it over the internet or they did it through some, you know, somebody that maybe, you know, wasn't an attorney. And they just weren't properly advised and they're not getting ongoing legal advice. So they're really, some of these companies actually have grown pretty large too. They're multi-million dollar companies now. When they first started, you know, they were just small potatoes in their minds, but now they're these big entities, but they haven't graduated to the next level, which is getting, you know, that expert advice to protect them.
Right. So you start out small and you get advice to form a corporation and, you know, maybe you've got one or two employees, you're, you know, taking people out, entertaining, and you're writing some of these things off. And, you know, occasionally maybe you're paying for dry cleaning or something like that. And, you know, 10 years down the road, you still have the same habits. And you've gained a whole lot more exposure because now you have 15 employees and you're still using the same old techniques as if you were a sole proprietor. And you're saying that if you do get yourself in trouble without the kind of advice that would say, you know, we need to really set up these different accounts and respect the entity, that there could be a chance that it could be pierced.
Yeah, yeah. So the whole idea of having an LLC or an S-Corp or a C-Corp in place around your business is to protect you personally. So you've got assets outside of your company that you should be, you know, concerned with protecting.
Mm-hmm. And so with the concern about piercing the corporate veil would be the ability of someone, a creditor, to get through that and get access to your personal assets is the whole idea. It's why we set up corporations is so that can happen.
Yeah, and so that you segregate yourself from the business.
Got it. And so you perhaps outline how to not get pierced?
Yeah, exactly. That's what that chapter is about. I've given some examples of what kind of practical advice. So there
seems
is
really
some
crucial.
Yeah, but the disclaimer is: make sure before you do anything, always check with an attorney.
Got it.
So I have a question for you. I mean, there's this big decision a lot of business owners come up with, and that is to either be an employee or independent contractor. Or when you talk about it in your book, are you talking more about should you hire people as employees or should you hire them as independent contractors?
Exactly. Yeah, because there are a bunch of risks for misclassification. So examples would be I'll pull this one out of the book. Let's say my IT business owner client has now grown to a point where he can't service all of his clients on his own. So he posts an ad in Craigslist and says, I need an independent contractor to fill in for me when I can't be there. So he finds somebody and he says, okay, I want you to be on call from 9 in the morning till 6 p.m. 6 days a week. And I'm going to give you a laptop and I'm going to give you the software and I'm going to show you how to use it. So he gives him some training. Well, even though he's classifying him in his mind and having him execute an independent contractor agreement, the IRS or the state franchise tax board or a plaintiff that's suing the company might, or if actually this employee, well, he's calling him an independent contractor, sues because he wants benefits, he might find himself in a lot of trouble, especially if you're looking at the IRS because they want their money for taxes. And if you're not paying the employment taxes, state franchise tax
board. Because, you know, the main reason for doing that would be you wouldn't have to pay so you wouldn't have to match the taxes in that place.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't have to afford them all the benefits that you give your other employees. Yeah, there's a whole lot of reasons why people try to classify.
Does the liability come into play there because he specified hours that the independent contractor needed to be at work?
You know what? The IRS has different ways of calculating or analyzing who is an independent contractor and who is an employee. And California state law is different than that. So California looks at the totality of the circumstances. The IRS has got a 20-step process that they look at 20 different things that they take into the calculation, and they also look at what profession. So it depends on that. So it's not a cut and dried thing at all. It's like a lot of things in the law. There's a lot of gray area there. But that's just to give you – I just tried to pepper that fact pattern with some things that were kind of nebulous that we just don't really know, you know, whether it would land on one side or the other. I think in that particular case, it's probably going to land on the side of being – that person's classified as an employee. But I guess you could argue it both ways.
So, Brenda, your book is this protecting you and your business is actually not done.
It's supposed to be in published form in 2 weeks. So we're waiting for it to come back from the publisher, yeah.
Pretty close. So, you know, the fact that you've written it, the fact that you've written Safeguarding the Nest, I guess third edition, and How to Avoid Catastrophic Costs and Effects of Long-Term Care, really the book resides within you. So if someone has an interest in any of these questions that we've kind of gone over, even if the book isn't available as of yet, you know, just giving you a call can, you know, you can get these answers.
Yeah, and I'd be willing to take a list of names of anybody that once we do get the published version, I'll send it to them then. It'll just be a couple of weeks from now.
I would imagine they can go to your website and request a copy of it and then
– Yeah, go to the contact page.
Okay, so that's GeigerLawOffice.com, and that's GeigerLawOffice.com. And you probably – you may have actually heard of Geiger, or Brenda Geiger, because I tell you, you've got a great reputation.
Thank you.
I mean,
you.
The people that I run across, you know, even other attorneys that know of you respect you. You've built a tremendous business. And you've also got this – the Ultimate Life movie premiere where you have – leased out the theater, and you're allowing your clients and I guess some benefits or friends to come out and see this movie before it's actually in the theaters.
Yeah, the movie premiere night is September 6th, and we're hosting it at the Edward San Marcos Movie Theater at 7:30 p.m. And we're asking anybody that might want to attend, they can contact the office and request tickets, and we'll send them out to them. And
yeah, and the office number is 760-448-2220. There's a few tickets left. Again, 760-448-2220. And this is a free event?
Yes.
We also had on Reed Matthews, First Vice President of Investments here with Wells Fargo Advisors, discussing retirement planning and really setting up a plan to make your money last. Nobody wants to outlast their money for that last 30 years in retirement. Reed is going to help you stretch the dollars and make sure the dollars are there so you don't outlast your money. Contact Reed at 858-342-1359. Again, Reed Matthews, Wells Fargo Advisors, 858-342-1359. Coming up next, Tim Stromble with Sports Court.